Broadcasting to New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Sydney, London, and around the world, this is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us on this edition of Trumpet Radio Live. It's Wednesday. Made it halfway through the week already. So congratulations to us. Lots going on today to talk about some headlines nationally and internationally. Preview of the Trumpet Daily Radio Show and Key of David programs as well. And a couple of humorous stories for you. Also, all that coming up on this edition of Trumpet Radio Live here on 101.3 KPCG. We're online at kpcg.fm. And, of course, our live link there at thetrumpet.com.
This is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on 101.3 KPCG. We are online at kpcg.fm. Live link there at thetrumpet.com. And if you would like to follow us on Twitter, I would recommend you do so, at kpcgfm. And you can email us to comments at kpcg.fm, and we will read them and then decide what to do from there. Dwight Falk with you here today, and Grant Turgeon as well. You know, Grant, the other day we were talking about sometimes how you go into a store and you see a dog in there, just like in somebody's shopping cart. And I saw that last night, a little tiny dog in a lady's shopping cart, and he was wearing a bow tie. The dog was. So I almost wanted to ask, what's with the bow tie? He don't have a necktie around he could wear?
So that is not against store rules then in most cases?
That's the question, because I think it was just for fun. Like, I don't think she didn't appear to need it. It was just sitting in the cart, and she was actually ordering something at from one of the counters, and the cart was behind her with the dog there. And I was with my daughter, who is about four, and she said, the dog's staring at me. I said, yes, he is. He's curious about you. Wants to know. So anyway, I thought that was kind of interesting, because especially the bow tie, I thought was a nice touch.
There are some things in society that I just would never dare to do. I would never try to take an animal into a store without knowing for sure whether or not that's okay. It's like, to me, you know, if you go wait in line at Subway and you reach over the counter to try and sample something, that's just something you should know not to do.
Have you seen that?
No, but it surely happened. I mean, that's just something that some people just don't have many boundaries, and they would cross the line over and over without even knowing they're doing it.
Yeah, so kind of interesting. Not sure all the rules there with the just the pets for fun in stores, but he was well-behaved. I mean, he looked very professional.
Better be well-behaved.
Looked like a stockbroker. You know, of course, we had the debates here Monday night, and one of the things about the debate was that they were really going after each other, Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. Well, that happens in other countries, too. Have you ever seen that, where these politicians really go after each other?
Fist fights.
Yeah, that happened in Georgia. The country. Georgian politicians duke it out on live TV. It was a Georgian parliamentary candidate. So they said they make a Trump versus Clinton debate look tame. They actually got into a physical fight on live TV during a televised debate ahead of next week's election. So there's some video out there if you want to see it. Can't understand what they're saying unless you can speak the language. But they're sitting there at the desk. There's a lady in between them, probably the moderator, which is a bad idea to be between them. And the one guy like throws a cup of water or something, and then the other guy takes a swing, and the lady's trying to break it up. So you thought it was bad here. Don't go to Georgia. That's pretty severe over there.
What must they have been discussing? We think that some of the things said here are so inflammatory that it might cause a fight. They must be going way past that point.
Yeah, it does happen. You see it. There's been some famous ones over the years. I can recall just seeing the video of the fist fights. And they get pretty severe sometimes, or people throwing eggs at each other. Politics can be a messy, messy business.
Maybe insulting someone's family. Maybe that's the line.
Could be. Yeah, once it starts getting personal, it can get pretty severe. So that was kind of an interesting story. There was a proposal last night at a Yankees baseball game. People like to do this, where they're proposing for marriage, and they like to do it at a sporting event. And that happened last night. There was a little bit of a trouble, though. The gentleman proposing to the lady, he dropped the ring. And it said it took over a minute for everyone to frantically search to find it because he dropped it down to like the stadium under the seats there. He did find it. She did say yes. Everybody moved on. So I guess that's why he's in the stands and not playing baseball. He's fumbling the ring around. He can't catch anything.
Yeah, the crowd's already depressed that the Yankees just pretty much got eliminated from playoff contention, and now they're sitting there and the proposal can't even go right.
There was one a few years ago where the lady said no. And I saw that. They put it up on the Jumbotron. Everyone's cheering, and she's like, no. And the crowd just kind of didn't know what to do and just moved on awkwardly. The awkward back away from the situation has an entire stadium full of people. So sometimes those things go well, sometimes they don't. This one worked out, though, even though he did drop the ring. But he did find it, and that's the big thing.
That's a risky idea. I've actually seen several times at games I've been to where someone proposes, and that's always in the back of my mind. What if the person just says no in front of everybody? It does happen. That was actually a punishment for one of these comedians on one of these shows I saw recently. No matter what the girl said in front of him at the baseball stadium, he had to say no. So basically she proposed to him, and then she said, okay, seriously, will you marry me? He's like, no. And he had to just say no over and over again. And then she starts crying and begging him in front of everyone. And he still says no. Oh. And so everyone there is about to riot because of what he's doing.
Yeah, I saw one that was actually really good. It was a story the other couple of weeks ago. Really good idea, I think, for a proposal. They had known each other for a long time. They were, I guess, teenagers, and they knew each other. They had buried a time capsule at like a camping spot that they went to. And so what they did, what he did is, as when they got older and he knew he was going to propose, he went back and he dug up the time capsule and he put in the ring, and he put in like the proposal note as well. And then they went back and he said, well, why don't we go dig up that time capsule? So went and dug it up, and there it was inside. So pretty neat. I thought, I was like, well, that's a really, really creative idea. You just hope nobody else comes and digs it up and takes it.
I thought there was going to be a problem at the end of that story.
Yeah, no, it worked out. So right. you'd have to keep an eye on that spot. you wouldn't want to do it and then leave it alone because somebody come take that ring. Or you might end up getting an acceptance from somebody you didn't intend to find it. Yes, I will. I don't even know who you are.
Maybe if it's a botched proposal, it's a sign that it wasn't meant to be anyway.
Could be. So sometimes people get a little creative with those things. Of course, the story that's been big over the last few weeks here in the U.S., besides the election, is the violence in the cities and the Charlotte man that was shot. There's more details coming out about him. You think he's a better guy than they thought or a worse guy?
Oh, far better. He must have been an upstanding family man.
Not the case. Charlotte man shot by police allegedly stabbed his wife, threatened to kill his family, according to documents. Keith Lamont Scott, the 43-year-old North Carolina man, shot and killed after a confrontation with Charlotte police, and of course that led to rioting and so forth, allegedly stabbed his wife, hit one of his children, and threatened to kill his family. His wife claimed in multiple requests for domestic violence protective orders, one of which she filed last year. Local media obtained the documents. In 2004, his wife wrote that her husband assaulted me several times by stabbing me in the back, almost puncturing my lungs. He sliced my ear and bruised my body. In October of 2015, she wrote, he hit my 8-year-old in the head a total of 3 times with his fist. He kicked me and threatened to kill us last night with his gun. He said he is a, quote, killer, and we should know that. She also said he carried a 9mm handgun that he did not have a permit for. That's all in court documents from last year. She dropped the charges, though, later. So, it's just interesting because when these events occur, such as that police shooting, there's an immediate reaction, an immediate fabrication of what happened, immediate riots, and then quietly details come out later. Not to say that somebody making these mistakes couldn't change. Obviously, they could. But it is a pretty good character profile, character sketch of this individual that we were led to believe was simply reading a book and waiting to pick up his daughter, which, of course, was also not true.
He was immediately characterized as a family man, which is true in that he literally does have a family, like every human being ever does. But he wasn't very nice to his family, obviously, and he wasn't some upstanding, innocent person, as is always claimed. But the question is this going to stop any of the rioting and the protesting about him being shot?
No, no, it doesn't. And you can't. You can't retroactively, you know, go back and undo the damage. Somebody got killed in those riots. Somebody lost their life in those. Mm-hmm. So is he going to come back to life now? You know, I mean, some serious things happened there, and it could have been even worse. And you're looking at the details of this guy's life, and they weren't great. So, and then there's more tension even today because somebody got shot in Southern California.
Yeah, it's just sad to see the cities devolving into basically the jungle, it seems like, where there are no more laws. And, yeah, you think about someone getting shot, that other rioter or the person on the scene there who died was most likely killed by another rioter,
yeah,
not by the police. So really seems counterproductive to the cause to kill someone else who probably has your own stance on the issue.
Yeah, just bad fruits all around. That's always an important thing whenever situations happen. You have to look at the fruits. Like, what is the result? Was it positive? Was it truthful? And in this case, the Charlotte situation, no, absolutely not. And then like you highlighted last week in that one story, you know, 70% of the rioters were from out of state. So it's not a good situation. And as more details come out, it looks worse and worse for that gentleman that was killed.
Yeah, so the common argument there, too, is that regardless of how this person behaved himself or how he lived his life before being killed, he shouldn't have been killed. But the reality is, if you're living a lawless lifestyle that does put you in contact with law enforcement multiple times throughout your life, basically every time you come into contact, and he had a lengthy rap sheet, you're increasing your odds of eventually getting killed by police, justly or not. But in this case, it definitely looks like it was justified.
Well, yeah, I mean, just from the situation, the way he responded. But then even, and I don't know exactly how the process works, but, you know, anytime you get pulled over for a traffic violation or something, they do go back and kind of check and see who you are. And so if they go back and they check this guy out, and this is the rap sheet that comes up, he says he's a killer. They better know that. He tried to kill his wife. He's punched his kids in the face. He's threatened them. He has a gun. You're going to think a little differently about that guy that's not responding to what you're saying. You have to. And now I don't care what they say about profiling. Well, you'd be stupid to not look at the history and make some decisions based upon that.
Right. And the fact that they knew he had a gun and probably also knew based on the records that he didn't have a registered gun, all of the evidence points to the fact that he was probably a dangerous person. And the way he responded definitely did not erase their concerns because he was confrontational,
right,
and he was non-compliant. And then you back all that up with, what is it, 20 pages of criminal records? I mean, whatever it is, that is not too reassuring for police whose lives are on the line.
Right.
And it's interesting, too, because we keep on seeing people maybe with liberal views changing those views once they're in those situations on the ground. I remember even in a different situation where there was a person shot in one of these sanctuary cities. And before that had happened, the relatives of that person believed that sanctuary cities were okay and that we should allow these people in. That changed as soon as they were victimized by it. But a lot of these liberal policies are not so easily supported whenever you're the person in that situation. If you're a police officer and you know that you can't shoot no matter what, even though you have a gun as part of your attire for going to work, basically, how do you feel when a person points a gun at you and you shoot him dead and you know that the entire country is going to be turning on you? If they were police officers, would they still believe the same way that they do?
Yeah, it's a tough job.
Yeah,
probably the toughest job right now, I would think, in the country. So I'm sure there'll be more that comes out about that. And I thought it was just interesting to look at some of that guy's history. And it was reported by Fox News, but it wasn't even reported highly up on their list. And I didn't see it anywhere else. It's kind of like, forget about that and just move on with the narrative.
When was the last shooting that was highly publicized like this where the victim was completely innocent, had never committed a crime before?
Boy, not that I can think of.
I can't think of
not a highly
one,
publicized one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hard to say, but yeah.
At least pick, if there are any examples of the person being completely free of all crimes before it happening, you would think they would pick that example instead of one where the person has been involved in a crime-filled lifestyle.
Yeah. Interesting to see, though, some of the history of those people and what's happening there. There is a this one's interesting. If you are if you're afraid of snakes or fascinated by them, you might find this interesting. What are you, Grant? Are you afraid or fascinated? Somewhere in the middle.
I have a healthy respect for snakes.
Yeah, that's a good way to say it.
I'm not kept awake at night by them,
right.
And I wouldn't run away screaming if I saw one 10 feet away, but. I would keep my distance.
You don't want one on you. Yeah. You don't want to wake up and find one in your sock drawer. They found what they think is the biggest snake ever, as far as the recorded history, in Brazil. This is a really big snake. 33 feet long, 882 pounds. Anaconda. They found it in Brazil. As far as they know, there's pictures all over the internet. You can find it. If you just Google Brazil snake, you should be able to find it. Huge. The pictures are unbelievable. They have the thing picked up with like a front end loader. It says workers carrying out a controlled demolition near a dam site in Brazil were surprised to find entirely too much snake in the ruins of their site, 33 feet and nearly half a ton's worth to be precise. The snake's weight, they think, is somewhere between 800 and 900 pounds. You see the picture of this thing? It is wrapped around this big piece of equipment. The head is almost bigger than the head of the men that are standing there.
Wow.
So it was dead, I guess. At first, I wasn't sure if it was dead or not, but they think the blast killed it. They still chained it up just to be on the safe side. But discovered in the foreboding-sounding cave of Altamira in the northern state of Pará, the snake is already being touted as the biggest ever. And while that gets tossed around a lot, the biggest ever, it seems accurate in this case. The biggest snake ever in captivity measured up to 25 feet and 2 inches. Earlier this year, a 17-foot anaconda was discovered also. But this new one seems to handily surpass those two records. Can you imagine if you had been, I don't know, hiking and you said, let's take a stop at this cave. You saw that thing? It's like out of a movie. You got to look at this thing. It's out of a movie. It's almost too big to be real. The video they shot of it, they didn't do a great job. It's kind of irritating to watch it, but still, it gives you just an idea. The thing is so huge.
And it's probably a lot faster than it is big. Or even though it is big, it's probably really fast because otherwise how could it catch prey? So something that gigantic that could probably outrun you. Not too comforting. That would probably give me a fear of snakes if I saw one of those.
That's too big. That is too big to be a lot.
That's excessive.
That thing should not. You know, what's the point of being that big? What are you going to do? What does that thing eat?
Rhinoceroses, however you say that.
Yeah, it's just unbelievable. So anyway, it's a neat picture. Check it out if you like snakes or if you're scared of them. You'll get a good scare. But it's huge. It's huge, and they had to chain that thing up. So they think it's dead, though. I guess they would know by now. Dead or napping. Let's hope it doesn't wake up. But pretty interesting picture there of the this anaconda, 33 feet, 882 pounds. Huge. Of course, this is happening here, Grant. The clownpocalypse.
I was wondering when we would talk about that.
The clownpocalypse. I've ignored it as long as possible. Clown sightings spread to Florida, Virginia, and Colorado. These aren't your friendly neighborhood clowns.
Not at all.
If there is such a thing. Is there such a thing?
Probably not.
Nobody likes clowns. I don't know who likes
what
clowns.
What kid feels safe around a clown today, especially?
Nobody likes clowns, I don't think. Maybe years have gone by. But these are a little more serious. Reports of killer clowns have emerged in 3 new states as Virginia, Florida, and Colorado struggle with internet rumors and reported sightings that have left several towns shaken. There are some of these towns where people are driving down the road and they're looking to the woods and there is a clown looking at them in the nighttime.
So imagine your car breaking down over there.
Yeah.
Not a good place.
Yeah. Is there a circus in town or are we about to have trouble?
And what do you think inspired people to go around like clowns?
Well, it would have been probably that movie that from years back that had the scary clown in it.
Yep.
Yeah. It says residents and authorities in Palm Bay, Florida, have been on high alert since a resident reported seeing 2 creepy clowns staring at her from across the road as she walked her dog. That'd be kind of an interesting call to police. You know, what's the problem? There's some creepy clowns staring at me. Of course, now they're probably used to it, so they know what you're talking about. They said in Marion County, Florida, deputies are concerned after it emerged that a Facebook viral video depicting a clown standing silently on the side of the road in the dark has been filmed along the main thoroughfare in the area. People like the video. It has more than a million views on Facebook. So again, they're taking that from that movie from years back. It was, of course, the movie.
Wow.
That some people may at least recall somewhat. I wouldn't recommend it. Perhaps the most serious clown-related incident this week happened in Greeley, Colorado, where a clown-oriented Facebook post threatened a shooting on Halloween night and claimed that clowns were planning to attack two area schools. The police say that the threats, while unnerving, are not credible. So I'm not sure how they exactly know that. But here's the thing. Impersonating a clown for nefarious purposes, that's an actual offense, is a felony and could carry with it a jail sentence of up to 18 months. So if you are impersonating a clown for nefarious purposes, you might be doing some jail time.
Wow. Yeah, it seems like a lot of these different horror movies or these kind of graphic video games do inspire real-life events. I remember not too long ago there was a show about a serial killer, and someone then tried to emulate the way that guy strangled someone as his victim. And so it was the exact same way. He snuck up behind and wire-strangled the person, and that was exactly like he had seen on that TV show. So it does just show you that people really try to do these things in real life after seeing it on TV.
Yeah, it definitely affects people. And again, the argument on the other side is that, well, a lot of people watch it. They don't all do it. Well, even if one person doesn't, isn't that too much? You know, even if it's just one, and it's usually more than one. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, they have some really terrible things on. And even during other programming, they'll run a commercial sometimes, and it's just, whoa, where did that come from? Just terrible things.
Yeah, and it's a PG-rated type show that has R-rated or not even rated shows being advertised in between. It's like you can't even protect yourself from seeing those things. And any sort of content that could inspire someone to emulate it like that is pretty evil and something to avoid.
Yeah. So anyway, I've never been a fan of the clowns, but I guess watch out for clowns.
It's just, what kind of lives do those people have?
Yeah.
To dress up as a clown and just spook people, and who knows what else they're doing while dressed like that.
Yeah. So anyway, I ignored that story for as long as possible, but
it's just everywhere now. It seems like I've seen it on the headlines many times.
The clownpocalypse. Of all the things that we have to think about, we now have to worry about the clownpocalypse.
At least it's a funny name.
It is a funny name. The Key of David program's coming up here in a bit on KPCG. One of the programs today is Become You Perfect. And it talks about growing, of course, spiritually to become more perfect, to take on the character of God. And it talks about how to do that. That's going the other direction from the clownpocalypse. Clownpocalypse is going the other way. You want to be better than that. So this Key of David program is a really good, really inspirational program. And it's coming up here in just a bit on KPCG. The Trumpet Daily Radio Show today with your host, Stephen Fleury from Edstone, England. He talks about the legacy of Shimon Peres, who died just here in the last day or so. He was up into his 90s. And he's, you know, there's different opinion, I suppose, about him and what he did for Israel. But and he was actually older than the state of Israel, which is, you know, kind of interesting to think about. But I mean, he was around longer than they were as a state. So he had a lot to do with the policies that you see there, the peace policy. It hasn't been very successful, unfortunately.
Right. Well, that's been what the Bible calls a deadly wound for them, giving up land for peace and trying to have peace with a neighbor that only wants your extinction. But at the same time, you have to applaud people who have at least that ideal of peace, even if they pursue it the wrong way. Winston Churchill described Neville Chamberlain as someone who was just misguided, but he did have the right motive of peace among men.
Yeah, people do definitely want peace for the most part, unless, I mean, there are a few that don't, but most do. But again, sometimes it doesn't work, though, the way they go about it. This is a really interesting Trumpet Daily Radio show because it gets into some of the details about what he did, what his life was, what happened in his life, especially regarding these peace processes. It's very interesting. Make sure you listen for that. A program coming up here in a bit. A lot of world figures are going to attend his funeral. The list includes former U.S. President Bill Clinton, Britain's Prince Charles, French President Francois Hollande, German President Joachim Gauck, and quite a few others. So big turnout there for the funeral of Shimon Peres. He was involved for a long time in politics and tried to get peace there in Jerusalem, but boy, it sure hasn't worked.
Not at all. I mean, they're being attacked more than ever now, and not even just physically, but just in terms of the international opinion.
Absolutely. There's a story here that ties into that exactly from Newsweek. It says anti-Semitism on campus is not just uncivil, it's intolerant. And so the author talks about the difference between something being uncivil and intolerant, because what's happening at some of these universities is that any pro-Israeli group is being shouted down and told to shut up and get out of here. And when the schools are contacted and the press or whoever's contacting them says, well, why are you allowing this? They say, well, we would like things to be a little more civil. But the author's saying, look, it's not about being uncivil. You're being intolerant. It's not just like, well, you're not that nice to us. You hate us. And that's what he brings out in this article. And you're seeing that on these U.S. college campuses.
Oh, right. They're just basically allowing hostile people to take away the voice of pro-Israeli groups. Imagine if a pro-Palestinian group was talking and they got shouted down. Don't you think the university would rush to that group's defense?
Oh, absolutely. A couple of examples here. They say when more than a dozen Jewish student events about Israel were violently disrupted at schools from coast to coast this year, including San Francisco University, University of California, Irvine, and Davis, University of Maryland, Boston University, University of New Mexico, University of South Florida, University of Georgia, University of Chicago, and the University of Minnesota. The author says, is it just incivility or intolerance? Incivility means rude or unsociable speech or behavior. You know, is it rude? Were the concentration camps rude? You know, you got to think about it in those terms, mm-hmm. because this type of thinking led to those horrible situations. They say when Jewish students who attempt to express their opposition to anti-Israel boycott resolutions are viciously mocked, vilified, and heckled during student government meetings at schools such as Vassar College, Ohio University, UC Santa Barbara, University of Illinois, they say it's intolerance. That's what it is. And so there's been quite a bit going on some of these campuses. There was an anti-Zionist student protest at San Francisco State University that disrupted a sponsored talk from the mayor of Jerusalem. So the mayor of Jerusalem, he goes to San Francisco State University, is invited there to talk about Israel. And this group, this anti-Zionist group, loudly chanted at him, get the blank off our campus, long live the Intifada, and from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free. Wow, what a great example, huh? Terrible.
Those same people would have a really hard time giving one example of how Palestinian society is better than Israeli society in any way. It just isn't the case. And why is that? It's because, well, they are more primitive in their beliefs, and they're oppressive, actually oppressive, not what we use that word for so freely here in America today. They're actually oppressive, and all they want is war. Why are they being supported so much when Israel is so much like America?
Yeah, I mean, Israel has tried to work with those people as much as possible, and on the other side, they want Israel dead, and they say that all the time. They want to, you know, all of those groups, those terror groups, they want to drive them into the sea, kill them. They call them the little Satan. But yet Israel's the one that's intolerant. I mean, it's just, it's a farce. And I think I don't know. I mean, I would think a lot of people would know that, but sometimes I think with some of the college students, they just get so caught up in their campus culture that I don't think they're thinking about anything except being part of some movement, even if the movement's the wrong one.
Right, rooting for the underdog, no matter how vicious and evil that underdog might be. It's just not, that shows there's not a lot of free-flowing thought in colleges anymore when you stifle one voice. And you can hardly even fathom it going the other way around, where pro-Israeli people are going around and shouting down and violently disrupting other types of meetings. It's just a typical liberal tactic, though, to just raise your voice and start yelling and shouting down the opposition, because you just simply can't handle an intelligent, sophisticated argument where you respect the decency of other people.
So that's kind of the spirit that's at least there on some of the campuses in this country. And for all of Shimon Peres's efforts, you know, that's kind of the world he left behind. So a lot more about that on the Trumpet Daily Radio Show today with your host, Stephen Fleury. Make sure you do listen for that. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, a couple other stories to get into, some really interesting ones about the ideology and truth. Which one's more important? We'll talk about that right after this.
We'll be right back to Trumpet Radio Live.
Greetings, I'm Ryan Malone, host of Music for Life. Get ready for some humor on our next episode as we explore compositions intended to depict elements of humor. From vocal compositions where the voices and even instruments imitate laughter to other musical jokes. In our Sounds of Scripture segment, we will discuss the biblical record's mention of laughter being mixed with singing. And in our classroom corner, we're going to talk about the benefits of using humor in the music classroom. So join me for a jovial episode of Music for Life, Music for Laughter.
Music for Life airs this Monday at 4 p.m. Central on 101.3 KPCG and online at kpcg.fm.
You can download Trumpet Radio Live segments from kpcg.fm.
Nice. Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live, 101.3 KPCG. We're online at kpcg.fm here, live link at thetrumpet.com as well. You can also listen to us on the TuneIn app. Put that on your smart device and take it with you, and that will make you even smarter. Even smarter with your smart device. Dwight Falk and Grant Turgeon with you here today. Before we get into this segment, the main part of it, interesting little blurb. Of course, we're interested in archaeology here at Herbert W. Armstrong College, which is where we're broadcasting from, involved in quite a bit of that in Jerusalem. But here's a neat find. Archaeologists discover 18th century pub full of untouched bottles of brandy. Wow, you go. Sometimes you get paid off right away. Archaeologists discovered the underground pub once known as the Astley Arms when they were brought in to inspect the site of a future skyscraper. During the excavation, they found pottery belonging to Thomas Evans, who was the landlord of the place in 1821. They say it's brilliant because you can suddenly connect it to the local people in the area. We looked online about the Evans family history and found one of his descendants now lives in Texas. And you can smell the bottles, too. You can open them up. As many as 20 bottles have been found in the former pub. They say we opened the cork on a few, and you can still smell it. They didn't say anything about tasting it, though.
So these are full bottles?
There's some stuff in there. I don't know if they're completely full, but they're...
strong alcohol.
Yeah.
One drop will make you pass out, probably.
Yeah.
At this point.
So, sometimes people think about discovering something and... probably more in the realm of like gold. I don't know about an untouched bar, a pub, but that's it's pretty neat. You know, they had a picture of it, some of the bottles and stuff. So just even the bottles are kind of neat to see that. Not that old, you know, anytime you're digging around here in the, and you're not going back to say Jerusalem or someplace, you're only going to go back so far in history and find things, but
yeah.
Pretty interesting find. Here's a pretty interesting write-up you've got for us, Grant. Really interesting, especially considering the election cycle and everything the media says, social justice, all this. It's from the American Conservative. It says, when ideology is more important than truth. This is from philosopher Rizard Legutko's book, The Demon in Democracy. He's an anti-communist dissident. He explores the similarities between communism and liberal democracy. So he's got some interesting comparisons.
Right. The similarities are rather striking here. He says that the liberal democratic man, especially if he is an intellectual or an artist, is very reluctant to learn, but at the same time, all too eager to teach. Is that not exactly what we see on these college campuses with the hostility toward these pro-Israel groups as well, where they shout down any sort of knowledge that they could receive and instead scream out their own beliefs? So they're very reluctant to learn about the other side's point of view, and at the same time, very willing to teach, or in this case, force their beliefs on other people.
Yeah, we see that everywhere. Even with the a lot of the rioting we've seen in Charlotte and other places, the rioters are there to, as you would say, teach, to tell everybody how it's going to be, but they're not there to learn. They're not there to hear both sides of the story. And whether it be the anti-Israel groups on these college campuses or these rioters in the city, they're screaming about, you know, we want tolerance and we want rights, and they're the most intolerant people and group that you can find because they won't hear anything. They know everything. That's a really bad spot to be in. It's a very closed-minded way to be.
Right, and this author also talks about how a lot of people have just basically lost their eagerness to try and discover the purpose of human life or to understand their importance in the grand scheme of things. So basically, it's a little bit easier to just have a closed-minded view when you aren't trying to look at the big picture. He talks about life under communist ideology because he used to live in Poland whenever they were dominated by the Soviets. And he said, the ubiquitous ideology in the communist and liberal democratic societies drag people farther and farther from reality. One of the most unpleasant aspects of living under communism was an awareness that we were always surrounded by non-reality, i.e. artifacts fabricated by the propaganda machine whose aim was to prevent us from seeing reality as it was.
Well, yeah, and we see that even today in North Korea. If you ever get a little glimpse into that society, they live in a completely fabricated world where, you know, they think, well, you know, there's a really good example of that. Actually, I was just reading about recently in World War II, an American soldier or a group of American soldiers, they captured some German soldiers. And in the course of talking, the Germans said, well, I guess there's not much left of New York City, huh? And they said, what are you talking about? They had been told all these lies that, you know, America had been obliterated and all of that. They had no idea what was happening.
Wow.
And so he was like, well, you know, sorry about New York. And the guy's like, nothing happened in New York.
Trying to taunt him or something.
Well, yeah. I mean, he thought that the United States was blown to smithereens because that's what they were told. But it wasn't true. And so it's the same sort of thing where, and you see it in North Korea, this guy, this author obviously saw it growing up, where you're just being fed lies all the time and it's not reality. And we're not that far away from that here. I mean, there is some truth out there, but there is a lot of misleading and fabricated stories. We see it all the time, even here in the United States.
Exactly. There is an overwhelming pressure now to just have a certain belief system, and even memorizing the taglines and the correct phrases. An example is to call everyone who is not white people of color now. You have to make sure you say that, or else if you even use African-American, that's outdated. If you use colored person, obviously that's outdated. But when you think of it, person of color and colored person are very similar terms. The thing is, you reveal your loyalty to the ideology by using the proper terms. Anyone who doesn't use those correctly is not up to date, and they're ignorant.
Yeah, you know, it's so interesting about that. It's kind of funny because naturally, I think people are resistant to law. They don't want a lot of laws. I think that's pretty just obvious. But if you look at God's law, you've got 10 commandments, 10 basic commandments, and then, of course, the spirit of that applies to everything. 10. Pretty easy. You can remember it for the most part. But if you're trying to remember all the, like, changing rules of, say, the whatever is socially acceptable in our society, good luck. How are you going to remember them all? And they change constantly, and you say one thing, and you're trying to say the right thing, and it turns out you microaggress some other group. It's just craziness. The more man tries to make up their own little laws, the more confusing it gets. And like you said about what term you can call somebody or you can't call them, how can you even keep it straight? You know, it's hard to even keep it straight.
Is it any shock that at the same time as we are trying to morph our beliefs every single day, people are less religious than ever? It's something like over 30%, I believe, of adults today, or maybe it's 25% of adults today, have no religion at all. 3 decades ago, that was only about 5%. So people are going away from religion because how do you reconcile beliefs changing every day with 10 commandments that never change?
Well, right. And then the religion of the Bible, let's say, is being replaced by social justice, people's idea of social justice, so this liberal ideology. Because even in, what was it, the last election or somewhere in that realm of time, there was that famous saying that, you know, the conservatives are clinging to their God and their guns and their Bible. And, you know, religion was made to be like this horrible thing that oppresses people. And they've replaced it with their ideology. Communism replaced religion. Mm-hmm. Communism was a religion.
Yeah.
And so is the social justice ideology.
Right. And the thing is, if you look up, I guess you could call it an objective definition of social justice, it talks about equality of opportunity, equality of income, all these things, which it sounds a lot like communism as well. So once again, we're replacing religion with a type of communism here in this country. And this author of The Demon in Democracy also does bring up how religion is being suppressed. He says this kind of suppression of free thought and free speech does have to do with whenever you criticize homosexuality. He brings up this example of a meeting of this philosophical group at a Catholic college, and obviously one of the speakers said something. He gave his criticism of homosexuality, which I'm not much of an expert on Catholicism, but in general, that is a widely held belief of that denomination. He was then chastised by the leader of the group for even bringing this out. And he said, you know, next time we'll do better at having diversity and inclusion in our discussions, basically meaning diversity and inclusion for all people except for conservative Christians or people who actually teach what our denomination teaches at this point. Even in a religious philosophical group, he could not say anything against homosexuality because that's against the ideology.
Right. Yeah, it just does away completely with any sort of right or wrong. You know, you do have to get back to a basic premise of law, and it permeates all levels of society, even in the debate on Monday evening. When they talked about the problems in the inner cities and the violence, and Donald Trump said, you know, law and order. But what law, though? You know, and he's right in the sense that you do have to have law, and you do order comes from following that law. But the laws are being destroyed. Certainly religion, Ten Commandments are being obliterated. That's been going on for a long time. But even man's laws now are being attacked. You know, just the basic, if an officer asks you to stop, you stop. You know, if he asks you to do this, you do this. Even those are being destroyed because it's unfair as they would view it. So by using this idea that everything is unfair, they're just destroying all law. Well, what do you have left, though, at the end of that? Ruins? Ruins and burned out cities? That's all that's left?
Yeah, just think about how hard it would be to change all the laws that law enforcement upholds based on the changing whims of popular thought today. Obviously, law enforcement is way out of date when it comes to the latest trend or the latest emotion that the angry mob is displaying. So they really have no chance when it comes to social justice, which is just a ridiculous term anyway. Why is it not just called justice? Why do we have to tack on another word and cancel out the goodness of justice by itself by putting the word social in front of it?
Well, it's a really it's a bad situation, because if right or wrong is replaced with I feel this is unfair, but who says it's unfair? I mean, everybody has their definition of what's unfair or what's fair. And then you get into basically you fall back into the rule of a dictator or a rule of force, of power, because everyone's got a different opinion of what's fair and unfair. So somebody rises to rule, and they do that by suppressing everybody else. And so now we're not under a law that is an equal opportunity law, and now we're under dictatorial powers. Mm-hmm. And that's what happens in communism, and that's what's happening here in the U.S.
Right. It just seems like there's a vacuum where a terrible leader could take charge. That happened with Hitler. The Weimar Republic was before him, and he basically seized control of the moment. Whenever you have people who are just so discontented by the laws of the land right now, and they're being made to believe that they're victims, or that a large subset of the population is comprised of victims, even if they are not, that kind of discontent leads to upheaval and overthrow, and it's just extremely dangerous. I do get tired of those terms, diversity and inclusion, because those are the terms that are so often used. And really, it's a sham, because, like I was saying, it only applies to the people who you agree with. And we've seen that. I read another article from that website pointing out times where President Obama has silenced some groups, but that are discriminating against others, apparently. And then he has praised other groups discriminating against others, depending on which one he agrees with. It's okay to discriminate if you're discriminating against white people, for example, but not if you're discriminating supposedly, like in that example yesterday, is the one they brought out about the Asians being hired as much as they should be. Oh, well, apparently you have to hire 85% Asians, no matter the qualifications.
Right. The lawsuit being that 85% of the applicants were Asian, only 40 some percent of the workforce was Asian. Mm-hmm. So it was a discrimination. And of course, that completely does away with the fact that a private company can do whatever they want.
you can hire
whoever you want to. That's a freedom that you have. And but again, it is very much a situation where law is being done away with, and you have this ideology come in, and it's not truth anymore. Mm-hmm. It's just the ideology. How much truth do you hear in the presidential debates? Not a whole lot. I mean, the only thing you could at least, I'd say, give Donald Trump a little credit for is that, and we mentioned yesterday, at least he identified some of the problems. Mm-hmm. At least he admitted $20 trillion in debt, that's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
It is. That's true. Yeah. Is there anybody out there who wants to wake up tomorrow and be $20 trillion in debt and would say, like, I think this is actually pretty good? I mean, nobody wants that, you know? And so at least he identified some of the problems. But then on, you know, not that he could solve them, but at least they were identified. But it's not even about that. You know, you read the media's reports about the election. It's not really about truth or finding a solution to anything. It's about trying to prove that somebody's a racist, or somebody's they secretly hate, you know, women, or whatever the case might be. And those things are bad if they're true, but again, it's all about the social justice, and it's not producing good fruits, that's for sure.
Right, and this article then concludes by just saying that this trend is the absolute worst for conservative Christians, because that is, in the end, that is the voice that is being silenced the most. It's pretty common now to see just complete outrage anytime a conservative Christian is found sticking to his or her beliefs.
Well, yeah, it's so funny about that. So ironic about that is that it's very much true. If you see somebody that would be more in that conservative Christian mold, say something about the Bible or say something in that regard, they're laughed at like they're backwards, and they believe in fairy tales and so forth. And then the other side of it, when it's Islam Well, it's their beliefs, and they have to be held in the highest regard and the highest esteem. You know, and everyone can see that that's a complete favoritism to that ideology of Islam, which, by the way, wants to destroy every other ideology that does not agree with them. And so there you are. It's such a – eventually the ideas butt up against each other. But then at that point, it doesn't matter because whoever's in charge just says, silence.
Right.
You're going to do what we say. And that's where it leads to.
Yeah, it is disappointing to see groups that have the same beliefs on homosexuality. For example, Christians in general and Muslims believe the same thing on that. But the outrage is only directed toward one of the two groups. How does that stack up? How does that add up? It just shows that the enemy of the radical left today is Christianity. And the only reason they like the Muslims is because the Muslims don't like the Christians either. But at the same time, they're ignoring the obvious threats that some Muslims do pose to this country.
It is an upside-down world, that is for sure. And there's a write-up about that at thetrumpet.com about how it is an upside-down world. That's from a few years ago, but it's a good one to check out. This piece in particular, you can read it at The American Conservative, When Ideology is More Important Than Truth. And it comes from a book, The Demon in Democracy. Of course, haven't read the whole thing, don't know all of the ideas in there, but there are at least some good thoughts from that book. So it might be interesting to check it out.
It does seem like a solid book, and this writer does highly recommend it to anyone who is a conservative or does hold to more Christian views, which, you know, those views have been the same for 6,000 years. These people who believe that all these forms of immorality today are fine, they've probably changed their minds on that yesterday, and yet they call Christians backward. At least they stick to beliefs once they feel like they have proven them. Unlike, you know, the social justice warriors who every day have a different opinion on these issues, you can't just be blown by the wind based on other people's opinion. You have to see what the truth is, whether it's unpopular or not, stick to it.
Yeah, and the thing I like, too, about this author of the book, The Demon in Democracy, Reisard Lutko, is that he experienced communism firsthand. He lived through it. So he's not just talking big. he went through it, and so he has a really good understanding. Anybody that's read anything by Solzhenitsyn about what it was like in Russia,
right,
that'll give you a good idea of what communism is like. Those people were just absolutely broken by that system over there. And so many similarities between that and what we see happening in the U.S. today, and yet not enough attention being drawn to it, I don't think.
Right. There's another great book called Because They Hate by Brigitte Gabriel, and she grew up in Lebanon right around the time when radical Muslims, backed by the communists, actually overthrew a largely Christian Western nation. And she shares that experience to say, look, the same thing is going on in America today, where some radicals are gaining a foothold here because so many colleges are very sympathetic to their views and will do anything to defend them, even when they are hostile to the West by ideology. Their very beliefs are hostile to this way of life. So there are hostile forces out there, yet we're not targeting our criticism toward them. We're targeting Christians and silencing that one set of beliefs.
It's worth paying attention to and watching how these things develop. There is one more little story today from the Washington Post. They say a disaster is looming for American men. Where have you been? That's been going on for a while. They're talking about employment specifically, and they've done some analysis of the data, and they suggest that by mid-century, if we get there, about a quarter of men between 25 and 54 will not be working at any given moment, based upon current numbers. So that's not a good sign. I think it's going to be a lot worse than that. not at that point, maybe, but I think in the next couple of years, it's going to be different than what people expect. So it is an interesting little write-up there. People, of course, are trying to analyze data, and one of the reasons they think that those numbers will be like that is because of the advance of certain technologies that are putting people out of work. Even today, there was a story about how they think there'd be some robotic elements to construction that will get rid of the need for humans, mm-hmm, and so forth. So that's an interesting thing to look at. But I always, the thing I think about that is, well, there's 100 million people not working right now in the U.S., so I don't know why we need to be projecting so far ahead. Maybe we should be. And there are jobs out there, but people a lot of times aren't qualified to do them.
Not qualified to do them, or they think the work is too arduous. You know, sometimes a college graduate has to take a job at a fast food restaurant. It's how it is. If you're really so desperate to get a job, take one of the jobs that are available and work your way up. But that's just not the mentality that prevails today.
Yeah, and there are some pretty good jobs out there too. That
much
again,
better than fast food.
Yeah,
for sure.
That people haven't been qualified for. So as much as they want to talk about the economy being good in the U.S., it hasn't grown at all. 1% maybe. You know, when they look at, like, say, the recent statistics, and 100 million people not in the workforce, that's almost a third of the country. I mean, you stop and think about that for a second. Wow. And then to have one candidate in particular say the rich need to pay their share, they're going to support 100 million people? They're already taxed like crazy. How about they go to work?
It's so simple economically to refute that, because if you overtax the rich, they take their business out of the country and basically they take the jobs with them. Does that not hurt the middle class who Hillary Clinton claims to support?
Yeah, are the unemployed going to hire each other?
How does that work?
You got to have somebody making a little money to hire somebody.
Yeah.
Some of the stories going on today. Thanks for joining us on Trumpet Radio Live on this Wednesday edition. Now we're in the downhill slide to the weekend.
How sad.
We'll do it together, though, right here on Trumpet Radio. Kia David, Trumpet Radio Live for today. Thanks for joining us. And Trumpet Hour program coming up as well in just a little bit today.
You're listening to Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG.